What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Movie Schmovie. You are here for episode 009.
Thank you for coming to our journey.
This is a journey. Hopefully the start of a long and winding road.
Yes.
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe. Just a quick shout out to everyone that's been keeping in touch with us on our main site, the movieschmovie.net site. We've actually been seeing a lot more response in terms of people following it, because it actually is done through Tumblr, but, you know, people following our posts and actually, like, reblogging them or liking them. Seen a spike in activity recently.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the love. So, we try to update it as much as possible, particularly lately, because Comic-Con came around, and we had lots to talk about, to comment on. So I really appreciate the love. We appreciate the love.
Totally.
So there's lots of ways that you can reach us. MovieSchmovie.net, Twitter.com/MovieSchmovie, Facebook.com/MovieSchmovie. There's lots of ways. We also have a Mixcloud. Look us up on iTunes. We're doing as much as humanly possible to kind of get the word out there. So.
Yeah, just... You have every avenue out there, I think, that is social network bound to reach out to us. So if you like what you hear, please spread the word as always. Sorry to sound like a broken record, but that's really the truth of the matter for this this kind of thing that we do here. Like we said, this is episode 009. We are going to start off with our Mighty Minute review. And this week's Mighty Minute review comes in from our good friend, what's his name? Jose.
Thank you, sir.
He sent in Zombieland,
great movie.
So that's actually pretty relevant in terms of what this week's podcast is going to be about. But I'll hold off on that for a moment while we can spend 60 seconds talking about Zombieland.
Yes.
So go for it, Ronald. You take 30, I'll take 30.
So this is Ruben Fleischer, same guy that did 30 Minutes or Less. Great movie, pretty much about a zombie apocalypse that stars Jesse Eisenberg and Emma Stone. As well as
Woody Harrelson, Abigail Breslin,
and that little kid.
Abigail, that's her.
Abigail.
That little kid.
So, love the movie. It's really, really very exciting from start to finish.
Yeah.
Some really cool surprises. And one thing that I'm noticing about this kind of style of movie is that it's very unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. You're kind of along this journey where you really don't know what's going to happen next. And that's what keeps me very excited about it. The dialogue's very quick and funny.
Yep.
I loved it.
I pretty much just say the same thing you just said. I actually had a lot of expectations going into Zombieland. I remember seeing that at Art House Cinema down in Baltimore City, the Charles Theater. Took some friends to see it that hadn't really heard a lot about it. Everyone loved it. It was one of those like crowd reaction movies. Like, you know, a movie is great when the crowd is as into it as it was that night. Lot of humor. Even some genuine, like, scary moments. Like, the zombie work itself is done really well. I think one of my favorite parts of the film, and it's kind of like one of those little things that some filmmakers mess around with, is like those little stops where they throw up the text. Like, Jesse Eisenberg has all those moments.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where he's talking about, like, the rules to surviving a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought all those little clips were really fun, and I think a lot of people will, like, quote that movie with, like, the double tap to the head.
Yeah, definitely.
Things like that. All the actors and actresses in the film are just straight on ace, and I think that the surprises that are in store in the movie in terms of some of the guest stars, without spoiling something if you haven't seen it, actually make the movie just worth watching for those little reveals. Absolutely. Towards the end.
Yeah.
But Zombieland's out everywhere pretty much. Again, Jesse Eisenberg, Emma Stone, Woody Harrelson, Abigail Breslin, directed by Ruben Fleischer. So if you haven't seen it, if you like comedy, if you like zombie movies, and if you're any fan of any of the above, it's definitely worth a watch. And then speaking about Ruben Fleischer, you mentioned 30 Minutes or Less. That's actually going to be the feature review for this week's podcast. So here's a clip from the film, and check it out.
Right now, you are wearing a highly explosive bomb vest.
Can we take the tape off? I'm trusting you now.
Help! Help!
Help! Someone help him!
Why are you doing this to me?
For money, dude.
Cha-cha-cha-ching.
I'll get you $1,000, I swear to God, please.
We're gonna need $100,000. Go ahead and tell them about the bomb vest.
I saw the little remote detonator on the back. We can trigger at any time by dialing a number. Boop, 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 beep, boop.
Allow me to make a little demonstration for you.
Pay attention to the cuddly bear there on the barrel.
Ring, ring, ring. Hello, bear, how's it going?
What do you mean you couldn't rob the bank? It was too hard?
Well, that's a shame, my stuff, buddy.
Be because time is up.
I like that bear. I don't even know you.
Cool. So as you can see, the tone is pretty much set for the entire movie. We really don't even have to explain what this movie's about.
Yeah, that we don't need IMDb this week.
Yeah, we don't need it. So that's the deal. He has this bomb strapped to him. He has to rob this bank in time for $100,000. And Jesse Eisenberg is kind of played by this character. I'm sorry. Jesse Eisenberg plays Nick. And he's on this kind of frantic sort of trip to kind of get this money or he'll explode.
Right.
Now, one thing that we have to kind of focus on is the relationship between Dwayne, Danny McBride's character, and Nick Swanson's character, Travis. So those guys are pretty much best friends. Danny McBride, kind of the stay-at-home guy. He looks to be a little over 30.
Easily.
Kind of a loser. same with Travis, who is the bomb expert, kind of acquired this knowledge from the internet, and they're working together to acquire this $100,000 to kill Dwayne's father, played by Danny McBride, in order to get this inheritance.
Actually, Dwayne's father's Fred Ward.
Oh, yeah, Fred Ward.
Danny McBride does not play two roles in this film.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Fred Ward plays Danny McBride's dad. He's like this old school army general. I think they actually call him the Major.
The Major.
And he's basically, you find out Danny McBride like stays home all the time. He's a rich kid. Yeah. His dad got out of the army, won the lotto, and just has millions of dollars. Yeah. And the idea is that, you know, one day Nick, or let's use their names, Travis and Dwayne, are hanging out, blowing shit up, you know, blowing watermelons up in the name of avenging what Bin Laden did to us many years ago. But I'm not meaning to laugh at that because I'm insensitive, but in the movie, it's, like, stupid funny. So you need to see that scene. But anyway, so they have this genius idea to get the money from an inheritance if they can kind of scheme this whole idea to get to basically kill his dad, like Ronald said. And they come up with the idea and the inspiration one night when they're at one of the local strip clubs.
Oh, yes.
And one of the strippers actually basically is talking Dwayne into doing this. Because she knows somebody that will actually take care of the hit on his father for $100,000. If that is accomplished, then Dwayne gets the money that his dad has in, you know, in the savings, and he gets his inheritance. And the ultimate end game for Dwayne is to buy and own his very own tanning salon.
Tanning salon, yes. And basically run this empire aside Juicy, who is the stripper.
The stripper. In the movie. She will be his queen, he says.
Yeah, and polish his scepter.
Polish his scepter. Yes. And by that, he means penis. He's very, very obvious about that, in case you didn't pick up on it.
And by polish, he means blow. So yeah. It's very, very obvious that Danny McBride is kind of leaking into this Dwayne character. He's hilarious, very vulgar, and Nick is kind of, Travis, is very much like the complete opposite of him. He understands that the severity of this, but because he wants to pretty much maintain the friendship of Dwayne, he'll do whatever Dwayne says.
He basically wants to be Dwayne.
Yeah.
He's almost like Robin to his Batman, but I mean, it truly is like he aspires to be him, he envies him, like, If Dwayne says jump, he says how high. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
You definitely see instances where, like, you can tell that Travis, like, has, you know, reservations about doing what's going on, especially, like, when it comes to killing somebody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Dwayne just has this hold over him, like, this mental, you know, full Nelson or whatever, that basically he's able to get him to do whatever he wants because he knows that, you know, Travis just wants to be him. And, like, it's like a almost like a brother kind of thing too.
Yeah.
So
now, one thing about this relationship that's very obvious is that it's the friendliness is kind of one-sided. Danny McBride's character Dwayne is very, very selfish, and he pretty much will do whatever he can do to acquire this money, and it kind of compromises his friendship with his friend Nick. And it's very obvious. Compromises the relationship with Travis.
Right.
At a lot of the times, it's very obvious that he doesn't really have his best intentions on kind of maintaining his friendship while he's trying to get this money. He doesn't care. He just wants this money.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just the motivation is the girl, is the money, is the tanning salon.
Yeah.
And in this whole scheming, you kind of the pieces start to come together a little bit. Like, you see that the guy that the what's her name, the stripper's name,
Juicy
Juicy's a guy from I think in Detroit, I think is what she calls him, or wherever he's from.
Yeah,
is actually played by Michael Pena.
Yeah.
Who is, I think he is hilarious.
He
in
is
the movie.
He is.
I was actually, I don't know if you know this or not, Ronald, but in my former career, I actually got to hang out with Michael Pena.
Really?
When he was promoting the movie Crash.
Ah.
And one of the nicest guys I ever met in my former job, like being in the industry,
mm-hmm.
and just genuine and truly appreciates everything. And like, he has a little bit more cutting his teeth on some of the, you know, some of the dramatic roles to begin with. But then he got into some comedic, you know, some comedic avenues with a couple different films. But I think in this movie, he's not a major player in it, but he is a major, you know, I guess, gear in all the scheming that Danny McBride's doing. But he definitely, I mean, I think he's hilarious. And he was actually in Eastbound and Down for a handful of episodes with Danny McBride.
He was the rich guy.
Right, the rich guy that, like, had the music studio in his house.
He had sex with Kitty Powers' girlfriend.
With what was her name? Paz Vega? Whatever her name was in the show. But anyway, Michael Pena plays the hitman.
Chango.
and he's awesome. He has like this really funny, like almost like a lisp when he talks, but he's kind of sweet. He's kind of kind at first, but scary too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's funny, some of the interactions he has with Jesse Eisenberg's character when they go to meet up. But speaking about Jesse Eisenberg's character, you heard in the first clip, you know, they basically hone in on him because he's basically a pizza delivery guy.
Oh yeah.
And they think, hey, what's a way to, you know, get a hold of somebody that we can actually basically force this onto.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea was strapping a bomb to his chest, giving him a timetable, telling him he has to do it or else he's basically going to blow up.
Yeah.
And in that moment of stress, after Jesse Eisenberg actually leaves the scene that you heard at the beginning of the show, he thinks of, you know, who am I going to go to? Who's my go-to guy to get, you know, a right hand in this whole endeavor? And that's when he seeks out his best friend. His best friend, played by Aziz Ansari. Chet, I love it. It's like the whitest bro name you can think of.
I love that name.
And it's played by Aziz Ansari. And yeah, so check this out, a clip from them when they meet up.
What do you want? Because we have nothing left to say to each other.
Last night, two guys in masks jumped me and strapped a bomb to my chest, and now I have less than 9 hours to rob a bank.
You're hysterical. Great joke. I'm gonna go back to my class. Is that thing real?
Two guys did this to me, and if I don't rob that bank in time, this thing is gonna blow.
And your first thought was to come to a school filled with young children?
I mean, I think the vest is probably safe for now. I mean, these guys don't want me to blow up on accident before I get them their money, right?
So you figure the two psychopaths that put a bomb on your chest made sure it was safe. There's no margin for error in the bomb vest design.
I need your help, okay? I can't do this alone.
If I let you go and you explode, it'll come back and eat at my conscience and affect my relationships with other people, like my future wife and kids. We having a picnic or something one day, and I would just be like, damn it, I shouldn't have let Nick explode that time.
So, as we get into the story, Chet and Nick, played by Jesse Eisenberg, are kind of on the outs. They had this kind of realization that they kind of weren't looking out for each other as friends. They have this kind of honesty moment where they're kind of throwing facts that they didn't tell each other prior to this conversation. Really rough stuff. Chet having some hand in ruining Nick's parents' relationship, things like that. So when you first meet these guys, they're on outs.
Yeah.
And he has to come to Chet in order to kind of get some help because it's very obvious this guy's a loner, doesn't have many friends, and he's an asshole. So he kind of has to seek the help of Chet in order to get through this whole scenario.
And actually the start of the whole falling out that they have is basically involving Chet's sister, who Jesse's character Nick is pretty much in love with.
Yes.
And, you know, Jesse basically flat out tells him that at one point they had sex on, like, I was at home, like, prom or homecoming or something. And Chet, basically, that's where it all kind of snowballs into, like, them kind of just sharing all these dark secrets with one another that they've been keeping from each other and realizing, like, hey, like, we're really not that good of friends if we're keeping all this stuff from one another. But the scene you just heard when Jesse actually goes to the school where Chet is substitute teaching, a long-term substitute teaching gig that he's very happy with and very proud of, and, you know, basically calls Nick out for, like, you know, the first place you think to come with a bomb strapped to your chest is a school full of kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he kind of realizes, like, this is a friend in need, so he ends up agreeing to help him. And from there on, it basically is just hijinks. You know? Them trying to figure out what the hell to do in terms of how to rob a bank. You know, they're basically instructed by Travis and Dwayne which bank to rob. Mm-hmm. But, you know, getting the supplies, getting the getaway car, getting their costumes, you know, whatever they got to do. The next, like, half hour from that point is them actually trying to scheme this whole plan out. And, you know, trying to figure out what their aliases are, their names, and they make up these whole backstories. they break into a guy's garage who they used to know back in high school, steal a car, you know. And it's just like, and everything that could go wrong sort of kind of on the way does go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and actually those situations are actually what end up being some of the funnier ones, because it's actually, you can kind of see like some of the strengths in like comedians like Aziz Ansari, like the situational stuff. You can see some of the way he acts and delivers, like his articulation, you know, how he just says a line.
He's a really funny guy.
Yeah.
You kind of see that stuff on Parks and Recreation every week. And
his stand-up CD is hilarious, too.
It is. Now, one thing that kind of makes this situation even more intense, that's kind of this dueling sort of danger that goes on. So, the having to rob the bank is one thing. Now, Chet tells him that the only way he's going to help him, since he gets the news of him having sex with his sister, is that he never talks to Kate, Chet's sister, ever again. Thus, the only way he's going to assist him in robbing this bank.
Right.
So he agrees to it. So there's two things going on. There's the danger of kind of the bank robbery situation, and then just him having to abandon his love for this girl for pretty much saving his life. You know what I mean? At the cost of saving his life. So these two things are kind of going on at the same time. It kind of makes it a more genuine sort of situation, because he has to sacrifice that for his...
Yeah, and I mean, in the end, he basically ends up like... he basically ends up like shitting all over that promise. He talks Chet into going to the pizza delivery place where he works, like, because he wants to quit and tell his boss off, and Chet's outside waiting in the car. And in the same time, Jesse actually like runs down to where the sister lives and like tells her how much he loves her and how he doesn't regret anything, and you know, his biggest mistake was like not staying with her after they had sex on prom. And she doesn't know, she's none the wiser, she doesn't know there's a bomb strapped to his chest. And Chet doesn't know that he went there to do that. And that can kind of comes back into play towards the end of the movie. But I think a lot of what gets taken into play in terms of the comedy is just the interplay between both, you know, Nick and Chet, and then also with, you know, Dwayne and Travis.
Oh, yeah.
I think some more of the absurdity humor is with Dwayne and Travis.
Yeah.
Like, the scene, you know, when they're blowing up watermelons, like I said before, and, like, you know, Dwayne's, like, basically talking to Bin Laden when he blows up watermelons. Yeah, definitely. And, actually, one of the funniest scenes, I know that you and I both were laughing out loud, was Nick and, you know, Dwayne's got money, like we said, so like his dad has this crazy ass home theater system with his massive screen and projection, and they're watching Friday the 13th in 3D, and they both have these glasses on, and they're all talking shit to Jason Voorhees, and they get up and they go walk up to the screen and basically start to air rape Jason Voorhees,
super humping him, making noises,
you know, just talking shit, like, you know, tag teaming him and doing all these inappropriate things, and the dad walks in and basically, like, you know, just makes a fool out of them both, just like talking down to them, which is some of the motivation for the whole movie. But scenes like that just showing how ridiculous they are, and that's a lot of the characters that like Danny McBride plays. Like, I think it comes out in most of the movies he's in.
Oh yeah.
And Nick Swornson too, I feel like he was pretty funny in this. I like him off and on. I don't know, I don't love him in most things.
I don't either. And I think it worked this time. The dynamic between the two works. Nick Swornson by himself, I really don't enjoy.
Not a fan. I guess maybe the small dose is what makes it work.
Yeah.
He kind of shares the time with Danny and with the other guys in the film. He's had another movie coming out later this year, that Bucky Larson movie that I was telling you about. Like, he's like this retarded kid, which I don't even know. Like, he realizes his parents were porn stars. It looks absolutely horrible. And that's the kind of thing you're talking about. Like, if he's the star, it doesn't work as well, but maybe like sharing the screen in the supporting role like this, where you're actually playing to some of your strengths.
Yeah.
It seems like it works better in this movie. And they actually have a really great like interplay between one another.
They do.
Just like, you know, that scene with Jason Voorhees, like I just was cracking up in the theater, and that's one of the scenes that stuck with me, having actually left the movie. And there's another scene, I don't even remember what it was in reference to, but it was like one of those scenes where like, where basically Dwayne is trying to like show Travis like how awesome he is and like how much of a man he is, and he's talking about how he to be appropriate, how he basically is very good at going down on women cutting his own hair. Yeah. Do you remember that scene?
Yes, I do.
And he says it a lot more vulgarly than I just did, but his delivery of it, hilarious. It basically makes it mean that you're a man if you can cut your own hair and service your lady friend very efficiently.
He's really good at kind of creating these characters that think really highly of themselves, but are essentially big losers.
Absolutely.
And kind of seeing that unfold on camera, he really likes having kind of broken people. And it's funny to see him kind of unravel as the situation
gets more serious. Yeah.
So it starts off as this kind of sure-minded guy that has this plan, and then he deteriorates right in front of you, which is really funny. Ruben Fleischer in a interview actually referred to this as a double buddy comedy.
Yeah, it almost seemed to that. That's kind of what I was alluding to. Like, the two pairs, like, that's really where the film centers on, like, both with the synthesis of what the robbery is with, you know, Dwayne and Travis, then you actually see the execution, you know, with Nick and Chet. But I mean, it is the two of them, and actually in one other scene I thought I mentioned is when Travis is being told by Dwayne, like, you know, this is the dream. He shows him this vacant retail spot, and he's like, yeah, it's like, we're going to have this tanning salon, and it's not going to just be a tanning salon. It's also going to be, like, it's like a tanning salon deluxe, like, where you basically can go and, like, be serviced by women. And he tells them all these lingos, like, all these different ways that a customer will come in. Because, you know, Travis can't, like, be the business guy. He's got to run the front desk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's running the front desk, so he has to know what all the words and all the verbiage is. And one of the ones that stuck out to us was something called the Tanny Glover, which is a black dude coming in asking to be serviced by a black woman. And the crowd was cracking up. And there's about five or six other ones that he throws out in that scene. But that is hilarious. It and is. That's the lingo. Like, that lingo scene between the two of them is that the buddy comedy you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the other side of the coin is the interplay between, you know, between Nick and Chet, you know, Jesse Eisenberg, and Aziz Ansari.
Okay, here we are. We get the handguns or the Uzis. What do you think? These look pretty real.
Get down on Get down on the ground and give me the money in the bank.
Wait, how am I supposed to get you the money if I'm on the ground?
Go get the money in the bank and then get down on the ground afterwards.
All right, I'll be right back.
Guns. Masks. You sure you all don't want to grab some condoms?
No, why?
Because this is usually what men buy before they rape someone.
Oh, we're not rapists. Us two? Small fries? No way.
It's going to be cash or credit for your rape kit.
So that scene actually is in like a Family Dollar.
Yeah.
When they're buying all the supplies. So if you want to expand on that.
So what happens is when the stage is set, they're supposed to be robbing this bank. They have to pretty much gear up. So what they do is they go to a Family Dollar and get all these tools that they think will assist them in the robbery. So what happens is as they're taking these things, putting them on the register, the counter, to ring it out, the lady pretty much implies that they're going to use this to rape someone. So it's that sort of thing, that sort of tone that pretty much is seen throughout the movie. That kind of funny ridiculousness between, I guess, the environment that they're in and them kind of reacting to the craziness. And that's what makes this movie so amazing.
And they're so ignorant to it as
well.
They are. They have no idea. Like, they know that it's crazy what they're doing, but when they're in a dollar store buying, like, you know, like rope, masks, you know, like knives or whatever the hell it was, like, it doesn't even think, like, yeah, we're just talking about it as we go to check out. And meanwhile, it's like, it doesn't click to them, like, this is kind of suspicious.
Yeah.
And the woman's like, you know, hey, basically you heard in the clip, like, you want some condoms with that, like, for your rape kit? I mean, it's funny, because, like, it's like they live in this bubble, like, of trying to plan this out, and they don't even, like, think, like, oh, yeah, this is kind of maybe, like, if we did do this, hey, maybe a cop might come back here and be like, who bought the, you know, did anybody buy supplies? And, you know, why wouldn't you go buy, you know, if I was robbing a bank, you'd buy supplies from maybe 10 different locations.
Exactly.
So you wouldn't be able to track it back. So if there's a bank robbery in Baltimore, it wasn't me.
Steve and I would be good robbers. Yeah,
I think we would.
We would.
And we would be living high, man. Yeah. We'd have our own tanning salon.
Yeah, our own tanning salon. giving out tanning glovers.
Tanning glovers for everybody. Free. First week. Promotional grand opening.
Free tanning glovers.
But yeah, so basically they get this idea down. They get their supplies. They get their car, which I said they stole from an old friend's father. And they actually go through with this bank robbery. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a really funny scene. They make up these backstories about, you know, that they're out of prison and they have, like, these Latino names.
Yeah.
And they go in there, you know, bust into the bank and they think they have it all under control. And in most, in all honesty, they kind of did have it under control. And then it slowly starts to unravel. When there's only a security guard there, like, they tell them to drop the gun and, like, to throw it over. And the woman throws it across the room and ends up shooting a guy. Yeah,
somebody gets shot. So it's really actually well handled. And the reason why it is because it's a small town, it's a small town bank, so they're able to kind of sweep the place really quickly and leave. And from there, that's when the chaos starts. It's actually not even the bank robbery itself. It's the
after.
Yeah, Chango kind of seeking his money out.
Yeah.
When the chaos really picks up, Chango is supposed to be meeting up with these guys to accept the money. But the weird part is, the way they set up the meeting is, Dwayne doesn't really give too many details to Nick.
Yeah.
And Chet and all this stuff. So when they meet
he's
up,
kind of playing them both a little bit. You know, he's like picking and choosing. Like Jesse or Nick thinks that when he gives the money to this guy, he's going to like deactivate the bomb. But there's like misinformation and it kind of starts this whole little like misunderstanding and then it just escalates.
Chango gets beat up. Yeah. Juicy gets beat up, and they wind up escaping with the money without having paid Chango. And Chango decides that the deal's off, and he's going to kill everybody.
Killing everybody.
He's killing everybody.
Michael Pena went from being a sweet, sweet man to a goddamn gangster.
To killing everybody. So it pretty much escalates from there. And there is a resolution that we're not going to tell you, but overall, it was a very exciting movie. So I loved it, honestly.
Yeah, I know you were really excited for it. I mean, like, I was looking forward to seeing it. I didn't really have a lot vested in it, but going into the theater, like, it's the same kind of thing as I mentioned earlier with Zombieland. Like, the crowd was really into it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, we've done a couple other comedies recently, you know, mentioning, like, Bad Teacher and Horrible Bosses and even Hangover 2. And in some cases, you know, amongst those three, like, being let down in a lot of ways. Like, I know that I liked Horrible Bosses. You were mixed negative on it, more negative.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think this is kind of like a win. This movie is kind of like a win. You know, I think it succeeds where some of those other movies left off. There's just enough story there where it's not too complicated. It's not too simple. And I like the idea of, you know, having, like you said, the two buddy comedies going at the same time. And then you have that wild card, which is like Michael Pena thrown in there, which I think adds another whole fun aspect to it.
You kind of don't expect him to be as funny as he is. And that's the cool part. It kind of jumps out at you.
Right.
And you start to realize that he's equally as funny as Danny McBride.
Some of these other like comedians
He's able to hold his own. And the interactions that they have are very, very funny. Now, Aziz Ansari hasn't been in too many movies. But I loved his appearance in Observe and Report. Observe and Report was a horrible movie, but his interaction in that movie, very funny.
Yeah.
He is an emerging kind of guy. He's young. I like Aziz for a lot of reasons. One thing about Aziz that's really cool is that he's not Jewish, not to be racist, but there's just a lot of really funny Jewish people out there. And he's young. He's hip. He makes references to Kanye West and hip-hop and anything else. Indie bands, MIA. He's a really funny dude with a lot of relevance, and he knows about current events.
Sure.
I feel like a lot of comedians that exist kind of don't have that kind of interaction. He has a Tumblr. He has a Twitter.
Yeah, he has his, like, finger on the pulse of, like,
pop culture. He does,
right,
which
like,
makes
he's a hot button right now.
Yeah, which makes his imprint on current culture a lot bigger than a lot of other people that try to stay relevant.
Sure.
So I love Aziz.
I think he's great for the movie. I think it's like definitely a possible change, you know, like change of pace for him. Not a change of pace. It could be like a what do you call that? Like a career maker.
Yeah, I think you're
like,
right, though.
I think it's like a transition into the movie industry. Like, he hasn't ever been like one of the leads in a movie like that in this kind of scope, he's usually playing like a background actor, like, yeah, you know, little pieces here and there, like in, like you said, Observer Report, and like Funny People and stuff like that. But he's great in the film. Jesse Eisenberg, you know, he plays a straight guy a lot. I don't dislike him or like him. I think he does what he has to do in this movie, and I think he must have a good, you know, rapport or chemistry with Ruben Fleischer, having worked with him in you know, in Zombieland. So maybe that kind of grew out of that. But he does his job. I mean, he plays like that manic, just like jittery guy that he always does. But yeah, it works though, because I mean, it pairs up well with Aziz, especially like in moments like Aziz is like drinking the energy drinks, and like, you know, there's a scene in there where he like is all hopped up on like Red Bulls, and it's kind of fun because like as hyperactive as Jesse or as Nick is, Aziz in the beginning of the film is a little more mild mannered and like mature, and then he kind of starts to unravel throughout the movie.
He does,
and becomes like this, you know, like energetic, like talking back, like taking over the interactions,
yeah,
saving them. Like he's the one that kicks Chango's ass and the girl Juicy's ass at the drop.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like it's good. It's good. It's good development. I think Ruben Fleischer, you know, I think he's a really cool director. I'm really excited to see what he does in the future.
I think so too.
I'm really excited for his next movie, which is Gangster Squad.
No, what's that about?
We posted a couple things on our Tumblr page about it, but the cast is ridiculous.
Really? Who's in it?
We got Ryan Gosling, Josh Brolin, Sean Penn, Giovanni Ribisi, Anthony Mackie, Michael Pena. That's just to name a few who's confirmed for it so far.
This sounds so it's a more serious
role. It's more of dramatic action. Okay. Yeah, it's like a chronicle of the, basically, the LAPD and fighting East Coast Mafia out in L.A. Out of L.A., like back in the 40s and 50s. Almost like an L.A. Confidential kind of tone.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But it looks tight. I mean, all the news coming out of it, all the action, that he's obviously got talent. Like, he's attracting people like Sean Penn and, like, Ryan Gosling, who I think is awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
That's his next film that's going to be coming out, you know, a few years from now, but I know he's working on it now. So I'm excited to see what he has going. And like I said before, Nick Swardson, I think he's best off playing the side guy. He's got that Bucky Larson movie coming out this year. I don't really care about it.
Me either.
Happy Madison is putting it out. I guess that's like the whole Adam Sandler click. They all get their little movies eventually. If they suck on his teat long enough, they get their own movie. I don't know. But I mean, overall, you know, 30 minutes or less, I mean, definitely one of the gems of the summer comedies. I think that a lot of people are going to be surprised how much you like this movie. You know, our movie all the way, you know, yeah, our definitely. Comedy, our buddy comedy, you know, times two, if you keep in mind what Ronald said.
So go see it.
Go see it. It comes out, you know, on the 12th this week. So don't waste any time with other shit that's out there now. If you haven't seen a good comedy this summer, or been let down by any comedy this summer, you know, go with the underdog. This is the underdog comedy of the summer, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think,
a question, though.
For me?
Is it better than Horrible Bosses to you?
You want me to answer that honestly?
I do.
Oh, God damn you. You throw me on the spot here, man.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't preface this with me.
No.
You know, honestly, I think I did like it more than Horrible Bosses overall.
Gotcha.
The movie itself overall, I think I liked more than Horrible Bosses. There are pieces of Horrible Bosses, like character, specifically people like Charlie Day, and even some of the bosses' parts in that film that I think were like really, really funny writing. Like, there were really definitely good spots in that movie, but it did lack, and I definitely appreciate a lot of what you said about Horrible Bosses, and you know, you kind of opened my eyes to some stuff. But I think with 30 minutes or less, I definitely like, I think the going in with the less expectation, you know, allowed me to enjoy it more, and it gave me that like wow moment at the end. Yeah, I was definitely like, holy shit, this was really funny.
Yeah,
it doesn't drag on, it ends when it needs to end. There's no unnecessary fat in this film. It's like an hour and a half movie. It's just an hour and a half of like good buddy comedy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are gonna like it, I definitely recommend seeing it if you can. So, and you know, you agree, right?
Yeah, definitely see it. I think that Harbor Boss is a great movie. It wasn't the best, but I feel like this movie was a lot better contained. The story was just.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is like a lean, mean comedy. Like, there's nothing excessive about it. There's like, I don't know, like the fat reference. Like, they just cut the fat from this film.
They
like,
do.
I think Ruben Fleischer does that well. Like, I feel like that's what Zombieland did. Like, there was nothing stupid in Zombieland that didn't need to be there.
Not too romancy either for either movie. You know, there's a love interest.
There's a tinge of love, but it's like, who gives a shit about that when you just want to laugh the whole time?
Exactly.
And that's kind of what the idea behind the movie is, and that's basically how it plays out for the whole 90 minutes. So,
definitely.
It's in theaters. Check it out if you want to see some good comedy. Definitely recommend it. Moving on to this week's DVD quick picks. You're going to go with yours first, I think.
Yeah, so I chose...
Educate me. I haven't even seen this one yet.
Right. So I chose Super, which is James Gunn's movie. You may have seen Slither. which
I love Slither.
Slither was a good movie.
Yeah, dude.
He also wrote Dawn of the Dead.
He did. The remake. Really
cool. Yeah, the remake.
Yeah, I love the Dawn of the Dead remake. We've talked about that before.
Very, very good movie. Now, super like the tone of Dawn of the Dead. Very serious. It's, imagine Kick-Ass minus a lot of the comedic elements. Now, okay. It's meant to be kind of a dark comedy, but the whole idea is basically this guy played by Rainn Wilson.
Doug Shroot?
Yeah.
Doug Shroot from The Office, for those of you not familiar with his real name.
Frank is his name. Frank is in a relationship with a woman. He basically loses her to addiction, and she gets, not kidnapped, but taken away by Jacques, played by Kevin Bacon.
Okay.
And his idea is basically Rainn Wilson, Frank, decides he wants to become a superhero and win his wife back. He thinks, I've been the underdog for all my life. I want to fight crime and pretty much get my wife back. Now, he chooses to do this through extreme means. He starts reading comic books where he meets Ellen Page, who becomes his sidekick down the line, Libby. And he decides to become a comic book hero. He creates his suit, and he walks around with a wrench. And whenever he gets into a confrontation, he bashes them in the head with a wrench. And the thing about this movie is there's no camera transition to another scene whenever he does this. He literally bashes these people's heads open.
Damn.
So there's a lot of that in the movie. So imagine.
Is it funny at all?
No.
It's just dark.
It's dark, just dark. Drama. There are some funny parts. Ellen Page is hilarious in the movie. She kind of plays Balty. The Crimson Bolt is Frank, and Libby, played by Ellen Page, becomes Balty, and they decide to fight crime and win the wife back. Now, it gets super serious. People die.
Wow.
People get stuff crushed. It's a rough movie, but I love it. It's one of those movies that if you really like action and kind of the lowest man on the totem kind of winning, this is the movie that you should watch. Kick-Ass minus the comedy.
Kick-Ass minus... Hold the comedy.
Hold the comedy.
All right, cool. Is that it's on DVD now?
On DVD now, yeah.
Cool, cool.
DVD and Blu-ray.
I'm going to throw out my quick pick this week. It's kind of obscure, but Jesse Eisenberg is the link. It's a 2002 film called Roger Dodger. I remember hearing about this through the grapevine, through some friends, and a little apprehensive about seeing it. But once I saw it, I love this movie. It's kind of like a coming-of-age movie with Jesse Eisenberg, also starring Campbell Scott, who is incredible in it. He actually plays Roger. He's Roger in the film. And the basic premise is that Roger ends up breaking up with his lover, who is basically his boss. Mm-hmm. He ends up breaking up with this woman, and he takes his nephew, played by Jesse Eisenberg, out on the town, just basically in search of sex. I mean, in all reality, he takes his nephew out there to kind of show him what women are like. You know, self-discovery, coming of age, like welcome to manhood kind of thing. I've been burned with this last relationship. I want to almost abuse what a relationship could be with a woman.
Right.
And he kind of shows him the dark side of it. But through doing some of that, not dark in terms of like seedy, sketchy shit, but like, you know, not anything that a real, like, I guess a young man should really be exposed to in terms of like what a relationship could be or what you should really appreciate about a woman or whatnot like that. But it's more like, let's just go on the town and just experience, you know, the nightlife, you know, and in essence, like he meets all these women. Like one of them is Elizabeth Berkley, who's Jesse Spano from Saved by the Bell. And she's really, really actually kind of cool in the show or in the movie. She plays Andrea, one of the women that they come across at night. And I don't know, it's just kind of like a fun, it's an indie film, I guess dramatic, a little bit of comedy in it, dark comedy if you would categorize it as such. But Dylan Kidd wrote and directed the movie. He really hasn't done a whole lot since then, but this movie was like one of the films that were talked about a lot that year coming out of some of the film festivals. It's got generally positive reviews from audience members and critics. I think it's got like a 70-something on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen it, I mean, if you like those kind of coming-of-age stories, like situational New York... We talked about New York as a character back when we talked about Friends with Benefits. Same thing in this movie. You really see a lot of the, you know, the uptown, downtown nightlife, you know, in this movie with Campbell Scott and Jesse Eisenberg kind of under his wing for this night of, like, just women, man. Just women and sex.
So are they paying these women?
Some of them.
Okay.
Some of them not. Some of them, they get a little money out, you know, towards them. Some not so much. Bar environments, maybe some street corner environments. Right. But if you like women, you like sex, you like just Jesse Eisenberg or Campbell Scott, I mean, it's a cool movie. It's kind of like one of those, it kind of almost reminds me in a weird way of a movie like Wonder Boys.
Okay.
If you've seen Wonder Boys with Michael Douglas and Tobey Maguire, like kind of that like under the wing, showing you life, but in the worst possible like environment, so that you know what the worst could be.
Oh, yeah.
So that there's only up from there. You know what I mean? And that's kind of, I think, like unintentionally what he's trying to do for his nephew. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Roger Dodger, it's been out for a little while now. It's on Netflix. It's on DVD. You know, so check that out. Again, directed by Dylan Kidd. Jesse Eisenberg stars in it. It's actually one of his first, like, one of Jesse Eisenberg's, like, kind of first real roles, like, as a, you know, lead or co-lead. But, yeah, that pretty much is going to, I think, wrap up this episode. We did a lot this episode talking about Zombieland.
We jammed a lot into this episode.
We put a lot in here. We put a lot into this little 30, 40-minute package, as we try to do with every episode. And as always, you know the drill. We're online. We're on, you know, Tumblr. It's actually, like, our official site, movieshmovie.net. Got the Gmail account, movieshmovie@gmail.com. Please send in some more suggestions for the Mighty Minute review. We definitely want more to choose from, and, you know, we like to hear what you guys want us to talk about. You know, if you have any other questions about the podcast itself, if you're listening to this and you have your own site, movie site, whatever it is, and you want to maybe help promote us, and we'll do the same for you, maybe in the podcast, shoot us an email. We've done that before with a site, cinemint.com. We still are working with them, but if you have a site and you want to cross promote, hit us up. This is the kind of thing that we could benefit from. You know, each of us could benefit from, you know, just throwing out to our different audiences. What else we got? Facebook. Google Plus. We're on Google Plus now.
Google Plus is weird because, like, you can't put businesses on there or your brands or anything. So
yeah.
We might get banned from that pretty soon. But we're outlaws.
Dude, we're rebels.
We're rebels. We're going to do it anywhere.
We're going to just, yeah. Maybe Gangster Squad should be about us.
It should be.
Yeah, man.
So we just buy some stuff from Family Dollar, put on some masks.
Get some rape kits. Get up on Google Plus. Yeah. That's what we do, man. But yeah, hit us up. I mean, we definitely want to talk to you guys. Send us some more messages. Send us some love. If you're on Tumblr, follow our page. We throw all kinds of movie news up there, trying to stay relevant. You know, for some of you that don't actually check a lot of the movie sites, you know, you can follow our site. And more often than not, we're going to have some stuff up there. Yeah, pretty relevant stuff.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so that's going to wrap up this episode. But as always, you've made our day. And
thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll see you guys later.
All right.
See ya. Peace.